and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan delivers his annual State of the City address at a luncheon hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. This program was recorded on November 3rd at the Denina Civic and Convention Center. Sullivan's presentation was accompanied by a PowerPoint presentation, which you can find a link to on our website at alaskapublic.org. Look for the Addressing Alaskans icon on the right. And without further ado, here's Mayor Sullivan's State of the City address.
Thank you very much, Julie, and thanks everyone for coming out today. This is the sixth and final State of the City address that I will be giving in my tenure as mayor, which is kind of a bittersweet moment, because when you have the privilege of serving the city that you love so much, there really is no greater honor or higher privilege that you can have. So regardless of what happens on Tuesday, it'll either be a mayorship that ends in about 30-some days or one that ends a few months later, but either way, you'll have a new mayor for your next State of the City address. Mayors are pretty easy to replace. What's really hard to find are good first ladies, and we've been blessed for the last 6 years with a really great first lady, I tell you. So involved, so great. Yeah, the mayor thing, that's pretty easy. Some of the slides you'll see today are slides that you've seen in the past at State of the Cities, but they're updated because things in the city really don't change that much year to year. You're still focused on public safety. You're still focused on making sure that your parks, your trails, your roads are well maintained. You're trying to make sure that every year you're doing the right thing financially for your city. So a lot of these things are updates, but there are some new things happening as well, which we'll talk about. We'll start with the city budget. We presented the city budget to the assembly a couple weeks back, and the budget continues our goal, which is to make sure they're responsible, that we make sure we're providing our essential services, but doing so in a manner that protects you, the taxpayer, from excessive costs. We know that it's expensive living in Alaska to begin with, expensive living in Anchorage, and we want to make sure that we're doing our part to not inflate those costs and make sure that homes are affordable. We know that, again, in Anchorage, it can be a challenge to own that home and maintain that home, particularly for our senior population. So our goal has been to sustain accountable budgets that do not continue the trend that we found when we came into office, which, if you look at the chart, you can see that spending was going at a rate that was simply unsustainable for the city. If we had kept on that same red line trend, we'd be spending today about $100 million more than what we are currently, yet I don't think you would have seen a whole lot of difference in service delivery or any of the things that we require out of our city government. The trend that you're seeing with the green line is actually a fairly amazing accountability of how our departments have managed their various responsibilities. In fact, in 2015, the budget we've proposed is about $5 to $6 million less than last year's budget. That doesn't happen in government very often, because the trend has always been you better spend everything you get in your budget so that we can get more next year and keep our budgets inflated. But, and you've heard me say this before, our department heads have done a fantastic job of making sure they're delivering service, and if they've got money left over at the end of the year, that's fine, and if we can do it in a subsequent budget for less money, that's even better. And giving the upward pressure on budgets, it really is a remarkable accomplishment. So 2015, about $471 million, which represents, over the course of the 6 years we've been in office, the budget we inherited when we came in was about $430-some million, so we've increased spending about $40 million, but again, had we been on the trend that the previous administration had been on, we'd be at least $100 million greater in our budget. So it's a good story for you, the taxpayer. Decreasing debts has also been one of our main goals. We wanted to make sure that we were sustainable, and when we went to you and asked for bond propositions to be passed, we could make that statement that we're actually paying off more in principal than what we're incurring in new debt, so we can get our debt ratios down to a level that we felt more comfortable with. And this has been, you can see the chart line there, it's been a good trend. It means every budget that we put together and bring to you for approval, we can proudly say that we've actually decreased the cost of what it takes to pay for municipal debt. And we focused our debt really on the basics, roads, parks, trails, public facilities, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. One of the things that is kind of the benchmark of whether or not we're on the right track or not are a couple things that we look at. First and foremost, if we're finishing the end of the year with a surplus, that means we manage your money well. And with that surplus money, it allows us to take care of one-time expenses that might be coming up in the subsequent year without coming back to you and asking for more taxes. Those things include things like police academies, fire academies. You might have one-time purchases of software or other equipment that aren't recurring expenses, so you don't want to go to the taxpayers and put them into an operating budget. You want to use your surplus money, and we've been able to do that year after year. The other thing is the AAA bond rating that we received from Standard & Poor's last year. We just got the announcement from Standard & Poor's that we've been recertified as a AAA city. Standard & Poor's rates about 4,000-plus cities in America. Only 300-plus have AAA bond ratings. When we came into office, it was a AA. By 2012, we had upped it to a AA+. By 2013, a AAA, which has been maintained. And it's really important, that AAA bond rating, they look at your entire financial systems, every aspect of your city and how you're managing money. And to have a AAA again is not only a high compliment, but it means when we go and sell debt out on the market, we're getting the best interest rates out there that are possible for any city, and that keeps our debt burden low. So good story. Our financial team has done a tremendous job. Kate Guyard, our CFO, is here today, but her and her staff, Ross Riswold, and some of these other folks whose names you're probably not as familiar with, Daniel Moore, the treasurer, I can't just say enough about the great job they have done. We just, in fact, had a bond issuance, which included both municipal and school board bonds, and they were gobbled up by the bond market. And we also refinanced some bonds, and we're saving for the city, with one refinancing alone this year alone, $15 million by refinancing bonds. Our team is always looking for opportunities to either buy commercial paper or get low-term and short-term loans, anything that'll make sure that the taxpayer is getting the best possible break on our debt. Again, this year, $15 million just in this one refunding, and that's for general government. For the municipal light and power, our electric utility, our refunding with commercial paper, and now the refunding is saving over the years $40 million for the ratepayers. So real aggressive, real results with those programs. Property tax relief, again, one of the things that we've strived for is to make sure that we're always looking for ways to save you your property tax dollars, your hard-earned money. We figure that the best way to have a quality of life is to keep your hard-earned money in your wallet and not particularly in the hands of government, while at the same time not sacrificing essential services. Between debt refinancing, restoring the tax cap by moving utility payments back under the cap, taxing below the cap every year that we've been in office, we've been able to save about $110 million in overall property tax for the property taxpayer. When I mentioned earlier that if we had not done what we had done, you know, the budget would be about $100+ million greater, that's where it would have come from. It would have come directly from property tax. So we've been able to save over the last 5.5 years over $100 million in property tax. And sometimes, you know, you don't see it directly because you might, in your property, you might have seen an increase in property tax. All I can tell you is it would have been a bigger increase had we not taken these measures. We're a growing city, so you're going to see, you know, almost always some incremental growth in property taxes. That's what a modern city that's growing at about 1 to 2% a year, you know, you are going to see some increase. We do have to pay for the increasing cost of services, but again, the story is a great story in terms of the overall property tax relief. Capital budget, every year we do two things. We go to you, the voters, for local bonds, and we also go down and work with our legislators on trying to get state grants for essential services. And we've this last year, 2014, was again a successful year. You, the voters, went to the polls and expressed confidence in what the city's doing, again, with your money. Focusing on the basics, we passed about $27 million in bonds. Got a little about almost $82 million in state grants. We put those into, again, essential projects, roads, trails, public facilities. Some of the highlights of the public facilities, so revamping all of the ice at every one of our arenas, Dempsey Anderson, Ben Boeke, the Sullivan Arena, the Harry McDonald Center, and obviously many, many different road projects. And with the local bonds, as you can see up there, again, just the typical things, park and rec, roads and drainage, et cetera, et cetera. But the good story is that over the last, and this is hard to read, so don't you don't even have to try, but I'll just tell you that in the five-year history that we've been working with you, the taxpayers, on bonds and with the legislature, over $750 million invested back into our community, the largest period, the largest amount of investment in that kind of time frame in the history of Anchorage. And again, nearly three-quarters of $1 billion back into your public facilities, roads, trails, parks. We said when we got elected back in 2009 that we would not particularly focus on building new structures, but we're going to focus on maintaining the ones we have. Our goal was to make sure that the next generation enjoys our public facilities and trails and parks as much as we've had the opportunity to enjoy them during our generation. So with the investment we've made, we're feeling pretty confident that literally a whole new generation will be able to enjoy the PAC and the Lusac Library and our Coastal Trail and all those other wonderful assets that we have that make this such a great city. Road and trail improvements in specific, one of the things that, of course, highlights Anchorage is our beautiful Coastal Trail and Chester Creek Trail, the overall trail system, 100-plus miles of trails. We've repaved over 7 miles of the Coastal Trail. If you haven't been on it in a while, the repaving effort is fantastic. We're getting a lot of frost heaves and weeds growing through, and it's now refreshed. It's a wonderful project. Laney Fleischer, Chester Creek Trail, same thing. The one thing that we're still working on that will be done next year is we've got numerous bridges on our trail systems. We found some of them to, you know, after 30 years plus of use, are in a state of disrepair, and in fact, in some cases, simply unsafe. So that'll be next year's big project. We're going to make sure we get those bridges fixed up. On the far left on the screen there, you can see a little map, and that's the Invista system. And what it does is you can go to www.anchorageroads.org, and you can actually not only get what road projects are going on in your area, but all projects, whether it's Public Works, Anchorage Water and Wastewater, MLMP. You can go to the Invista system, and it really tracks, and you can click on a particular project, and it'll tell you all the details, how much it's being spent, when it's anticipated to be constructed, etc. So a real nice tool for the public to keep informed about just what's going on in your neighborhood. Sometimes you'll see barricades go up or, you know, big signs closing off a street, and you need to know what's going on in your neighborhood, and that's where you can find it. Park improvements is something we've been really, really proud of. You know, when we came into office, there had been an assessment done of municipal parks, and the overall rating for our parks was unfortunately a D, because we just had not put the effort into the park systems. And working with the Parks Foundation, Beth Nordland and her group, we've been able to leverage money from bonds and from capital grants. And with the help of groups like the Rasmussen Foundation and many, many volunteers, we've been able to work on over 100 park improvement projects in the last 5 years, over $20 million in rehabilitation, and that's just the dollar amount. When you count all the volunteer hours that were put in, it's 460-plus thousand hours of volunteer work on these parks, really a tremendous community involvement. And so another opportunity to say thank you to the community for recognizing that the quality of life in our town depends on having well-maintained parks and trails, and boy, the community has really responded, and so thanks to all who've ever helped out on that. One of the cool things is the Youth Employment in the Parks project, which since 2009, almost 230 teens, basically their first job, and their first job, is doing something good for their community, so it's a real double win. They learn how to work, how to have that responsibility, and at the same time, they're doing something good for their neighborhood. So the YEP program, Youth Employment in the Parks, has been a big success. Facility improvements, specifically, we talked about it. Obviously, we spent a large investment in our facilities. The Sullivan Arena, if you haven't been in there for an Aces game or a Seawolf hockey game, it's really a fantastic project. Not completely done yet, but we're getting there. The main thing that is we've got this new scoreboard and sound system that we were able to obtain from a hockey team in the States that had bought all brand new state-of-the-art equipment, and then literally within a couple of weeks later declared bankruptcy. We were able to pick up this system for a dime on the dollar. Tremendous asset for the arena. Again, if you haven't seen it yet or heard the system, it's a tenfold upgrade from where we were. But the arena is getting all new refrigeration systems. It's getting new dasher boards, new glass, new seating, new paint, new boilers. Again, refreshing that facility for the next 20, 30 years. And that same amount of improvement, new ice is going into the other ice arenas, as I mentioned. And it's a new state-of-the-art CO2 system, which is important because the old systems use Freon. And Freon, when it's unfortunately occasionally in an aging system, if you get a pipe break or something, Freon can be dangerous. The new CO2 systems are much safer and much more efficient. But the other good thing is we actually get to sell that Freon, because there's places that still use Freon, not just for hockey rinks, but for other purposes. So we're capturing all the Freon out of the ice rinks, and then we sell it out on the market and actually make hundreds of thousands of dollars from selling our Freon. So that's a good story. Other facility improvements, again, refreshing all of our wonderful public facilities, over $4 million to the PAC. $12.5 million to the Anchorage Museum, which Larry Cash and his team have been working hard on revamping the entrance, and the whole experience when you come into the library will be much improved when his team is done and our public works team is done. As you know, having an exterior stairway in a subarctic climate is probably not the best way to have an entrance in a facility like a library. So we're going to see something far improved with the work that Larry and his team are doing. And, you know, just a bunch of other projects throughout the city. Again, thanks to both our state legislators. I don't know if there's any of them here today. I didn't see any, but if you see them, tell them thanks, because they've made that commitment. There are legislators. They represent Anchorage, and they remember where they came from and make sure that we've got the proper funding. Talk a little bit about AO 37, the Responsible Labor Act. It's on the ballot tomorrow.
Quick reminder here, this talk was recorded the day before the November 4th election. Voters have since repealed AO 37, meaning unions will continue to negotiate under the municipality's old labor law.
So it's just a good opportunity for me to give out some information that maybe counters some of the misinformation that's been out there. And first of all, I'm going to start off by saying how disappointed I am that we have public safety officials, both current and retired, who are out there scaring the public that AO 37 is somehow going to make our city less safe. That is absolutely untrue. It does several things that are just common sense. And the reason it came into play was, well, as we saw in 2008, the Assembly passed and Mayor Begich introduced the richest contracts in Anchorage history in the midst of the worst recession in 70 years. So when revenues were known to be declining by millions of dollars, we increased our expenses by many millions of dollars. That is just bad business. And your business people here in the audience, you don't dramatically increase your expenses when your revenues are declining, but that's what they did. And I wanted to make sure that that didn't happen again to you, the taxpayer, because it was unfair. And I'm doing this, passed it not for my administration, because I know that I can negotiate tough contracts, but I wanted to make sure in the future there were sideboards placed on negotiations so that we had contracts that were fair to the employees, but also fair to you that have to pay those employees. And here's what it does. It standardizes benefits, for example. We had different definitions of overtime. We had different health care plans for different unions. We had holidays where Seward's Day was basically celebrated on Friday for one group and Monday for another group. And if you're a department manager, you've got three or four unions on underneath you. You've got some people showing up on Friday, some showing up on Monday. Their overtime is different for every group. It's just unmanageable. So we've actually tried to standardize all that, and so far that's been successful. We've eliminated the right to strike in the ordinance. You, the public, should never be denied public service because management and labor are in disagreement. These public services, for the most part, can't be found somewhere else. Who else are you going to find to run a water and sewer utility? Who else are you going to find to do police and fire operations or health and human services? Those are peculiar services that cities provide, and you should never be denied those, again, because management and labor are negotiating. One of the things that we eliminated or just put sideboards on was how much total compensation an employee can receive in a year. So what we did, we said, well, let's make it based on what's going on in the local economy, which is your CPI, your consumer price index. And so we take a five-year average of the consumer price index, add 1% in case we've had a very robust construction year, and that's the maximum that an annual increase can have on a contract. It just makes common sense. I mean, I don't know whose economy you would use to raise compensation without looking at your own economy as the benchmark you should use. We're getting rid of binding arbitration in the law. Binding arbitration essentially puts the decision-making on a contract into the hands of someone who doesn't even live in your community. Usually somebody from outside is the arbitrator. We want that in the hands of the Assembly. The Assembly does the final decision-making on all contracts except police and fire. Police and fire have binding arbitration. Our feeling was if these seven other contracts, if it works having the assembly make the final decisions, why not these other two? Because the assembly is accountable. If you don't like the decisions you make, they make, you can fire them. You don't elect them next time. You can't fire an arbitrator who isn't even invested in your community. A few other rules, but for the most part, well, another one, you know, right now, you, the taxpayer, are paying union officials to do union work. Some of them, that's all they do. They're full-time union folks, like the police department's union guy is a full-time union representative, and you're paying his salary, and basically what you're paying is for him to negotiate against the taxpayer, against the administration. Not to say that his intentions aren't good when he's doing his work, and he actually is a sworn officer, could be called into duty, but for the most part, he's doing union work, and you're paying for it. So those are some of the things that AO 37 does. The one that I think the unions have the most concern about is AO 37 restores management rights to do the scheduling. Now, any of you who are business people, if you're managers, you schedule your employees. In our case, we've negotiated away the right to schedule employees, and the employees schedule themselves in many of the departments, including police and fire. That's management's job. That's what a manager does. And doesn't mean the managers won't consult with the employees. Of course you will. You want that collaborative effort. But to suggest that the police chief, who is a longtime former police officer, or the fire chief, a longtime fireman, would somehow make their departments less safe by not scheduling properly, really is just a scare tactic, and very disappointing to me that they would resort to that kind of stuff. Our chiefs are professionals. They're going to schedule their staff in the way that provides the best public service out there and the best public safety. So a yes vote keeps AO 37. A no vote repeals it. I'm urging you to vote yes. It's the last item on the ballot. You have to actually search through all the judges, all the other stuff. It's the very last thing. It's on the back of a page. And so hopefully you can find it. And again, urge you to vote yes.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan. He's delivering his annual State of the City address at a luncheon hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. This program was recorded November 3rd at the Dedina Civic and Convention Center.
Talking about our commitment to public safety, though, we've not just talked about it, we've walked the walk. We've done everything we can to make sure our first responders have the best equipment, the best facilities. We've built two new fire stations. We've got two more fire stations coming on board next year. We've replaced ambulances and fire engines. We've added personal watercraft for water rescue in the fire department alone. So again, we've made that commitment. We've had fire academies. Their staffing is good. We're short about three paramedics right now, but we've got an academy going for them, and we'll be back to full strength with the fire department. Same thing with the police department. You know, there was a great incentive given back in 2009 when Acting Mayor Klayman got some concessions from the police department in exchange for, at the end of 2013, lots of money came back to those folks that gave up concessions if they retired in 2014. And so we lost a lot of officers, and we're making up for it. We've had an academy last year, two academies this year, one's ongoing right now, another academy scheduled for next year. And so we'll get our force back to where we want it to be. Bottom line is we like to employ community policing methodology, which means we put our cops where the crime is. We employ our police officers on regular beats so that they get to know the neighborhoods they're working. They're not scattered on random shifts like they were in the previous administration. They're assigned a beat. They get to know the businesses. They get to know the kids. They get to know the troublemakers. They get to know who they can talk to and get the right information. It's very important. Community policing works, but it works even better when you have more staff. And so we agree with those that have said we need to beef up the staff. We're doing it. And we're going to continue to do it till we get to a level where we can truly employ our community policing at the level we want. One of the things that's amazing, though, is when it comes to crime, and I'll show you some stats here in just a second, but the five-year crime average during the last 5 years is actually lower than the previous five-year average. So we're making good gains. That's the kind of trends you want. You might have a spike 1 year in a particular category. We track seven major categories of crime. But again, the five-year average that just completed is lower than the previous five-year. But in a stat I've told you before, and it's pretty amazing, is there's fewer crimes reported today than 30 years ago, and we're a 100,000-person greater city. So we're generally a pretty safe city. If you're not involved in drugs or abusing alcohol, your odds of being in some sort of a violent incident are very rare in Anchorage. And you know, property crimes occur. We're a big city, 300,000 people plus. But the bottom line is, safer city than 30 years ago, and we've grown by 100,000 people. It's a pretty amazing stat. Some of the stats you can see, overall crime, as you can see, is down. The murder rate is down. And again, this is compared to the previous 5 years during this five-year trend. We've got aggravated assault is down. The one statistic where we're still not making progress, and it's just intractable, and you've heard me mention this before, is in our rape statistics. Forcible rape stats are up, and again, it's a statewide phenomena. We're the leaders in the nation, state of Alaska, and it's just it's unacceptable, but we're not making inroads, and I don't have a magic bullet for this. We keep trying. We have to get as much information as we can out to the public about how to be safe and not put yourself in bad situations. It's particularly true as we're, you know, a growing city. We're becoming more and more attractive for rural residents to move into Anchorage because there's a lot of challenges in rural Alaska with the cost of fuel and just other high expenses and lack of job opportunity. We're seeing more influx into urban areas, both Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, etc. And again, a lot of times folks coming into an urban environment are not as aware as they should be about how to be safe. It's not an excuse, it's just a fact, and more education clearly part of the solution. Burglary rates are down, robbery rate up slightly, theft and larceny down a little bit, motor vehicle theft way down. And so just overall, though, the trend is the five-year average is down. Those are the kind of trends you want. So when you see a dramatic headline, I think there was one over the weekend about something, a shooting outside the Captain Cook Hotel, and those are the ones that get the headlines. But the overall picture in Anchorage, again, we're a safer city than ever before. One of the things that gives us confidence about where Anchorage is at is when you see the private sector making major investments in your community. This is a sign of confidence that the Anchorage economy is strong, that it's going to continue to be robust. They like the way the city's being managed in terms of financial management. They know they're not going to get somehow spiked with a huge increase in property taxes or business personal property tax because we're on a nice, steady, sustainable curve. You can see some of the projects that have come online. You're familiar with a lot of them. Certainly Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's, the big new retail outlets, major employers as well, hundreds of people working at these places. Out in Eagle River, Eklutin is building a new commercial plaza, a new outlet mall. Anybody like outlet malls besides me? Raise your hand. Yeah. Well, we've got a new outlet mall coming on C Street and 100th. JL Properties is building that facility by this time next year. I think we'll have an opportunity to see some brand name retailers in there with some great bargains. New office building being built at International and C Street by JL Properties. Ceres got their new office building going up on Fireweed there right by Gamble. One of the fun ones, you can see that airplane picture up there, and that's TDX, where Easy Park, I think we had not Easy Park, but Master Park. Where's my park person? Alaska Park. There you go. Yes. Their facility has gone up from what was before the National Guard Armory sitting there that the city owned, old armory. We were able to sell it for $4.5 million, put that property on the tax rolls. The Alaska Park folks have developed the parking garage. There's going to be a new TDX office building there eventually, and at some point the Coast Hotel is going to be replaced with a brand new hotel. They're all with an aviation theme. In fact, they're working with the Alaska Aviation Heritage Museum and bringing some of those airplanes over because they're bursting at the seams over at the museum. So we'll have another opportunity to showcase the great aviation history thanks to our friends at Alaska Park. So appreciate all their hard work, but it's really a cool looking ultimate design of the aircraft design on it. And then nonprofit groups are making investments as well, and sometimes these get overlooked, but you know, they're often down working with our legislature, getting grants, and working with the community, getting building fund fundraisers going, and we've had some great new ones come on board. The Blood Bank, if you've driven by Airport Heights and DeBar lately and seen the steel going up for the new Blood Bank building, I was there at that dedication some months back, and it's just soon going to be an amazing facility for all of Alaska. We'll have a state-of-the-art Blood Bank. YMCA did an expansion, had a new pool over at YMCA. The new Covenant House facility that you've probably seen has been up for over a year now. The new UAA Sports Center, if you haven't been in the new UAA Sports Center, If you didn't go to the Tim McGraw concert, we've been in there several times for volleyball games. Fantastic facility. It's going to serve this community for many years to come. I had people question. They said, well, gosh, you know, you've got these Anchorage facilities. You've got your Sullivan Arena. Isn't this going to compete? And the answer is simply that we're a growing community. You know, if we're growing 1% to 2% a year, well, in 20 years, you could be a 40% bigger community. You need these kinds of facilities to accommodate that growth, to have options out there for people to use for their various events. New engineering building going up, at the Tribal Health Consortium, on and on. It's just the nonprofit community is really making an investment in our community. Then there's, of course, the new public indoor tennis facility that, wait a minute, what happened to that? Oh, it blew up. It's a... You can't win them all, right? And so the Alaska Tennis Association, you know, they wanted to make sure that, you know, kids who couldn't afford going to the private clubs had a place to maybe learn the lifetime sport. The assembly decided not to appropriate the money. But the nonprofit Alaska Tennis Association is going to keep working on a plan where, again, there could be some place where, even if we just put a rain cover over some of the outdoor courts, where kids can have a little bit longer season. The high school season this year was almost entirely rained out, so you don't want to take a step backwards in a community like Anchorage. We're a progressive community. We look forward. We don't take steps backwards, so they'll keep working on that. Ship Creek Waterfront, this is a project we're very excited about. You know, people, mayors for years have been talking about, you know, can we do something different down at Ship Creek? You know, it's got such opportunity. We came literally from the tent city down at Ship Creek up to, you know, 3rd and 4th Avenue, and now we've, as you look out the window, you can see Anchorage way off in the horizon, which I don't think folks, you know, 100 years ago ever imagined that this would be the Anchorage that would be realized after that move from a tent city. But as you look down there at Ship Creek, you know, it's still an amazing area. As our architects that helped develop the plan said, you're a city on the water, but you don't have a waterfront. And we're one of the few cities in America that has access like that on the Pacific Ocean. I mean, the Cook Inlet's the Pacific Ocean, and we essentially have an underdeveloped waterfront area. We've been working closely with our friends at the railroad. We've got some railroad folks here because a lot of it is their lease land, and they share the vision, I think, of doing something more dynamic down there, a combination of housing, combination of small business, combination of you know, maybe some public offices and facilities as well, and maybe even eventually moving our cruise ship dock away from the industrial port to where you see that cruise ship kind of parked right there, so that the first vista visitors on cruise ships come, the first thing they see is, you know, not the industrial port with big tanks and, you know, fuel storage, that kind of stuff, but that vista that we think is so beautiful. If you go down to the boat ramp now and you look back, you got the city framed against the Chugach Mountains. It's just spectacular. And again, the architects that helped us develop, they said they came up on their own dime and they did that exploration down there. So it's one of the most scenic vistas of any place they'd ever worked, and they work all over the world. So we've got an opportunity there. These sort of plans don't happen overnight. These are generational plans, but we've got real action plans to get it started. The first part is connecting the Tony Knowles Coastal Trail with the Ship Creek Trail. They don't connect now, and it'd be nice to complete that loop so that you've got this wonderful connection between the two trails. And the rest will happen. Again, it doesn't happen overnight, but we know once the plan was presented, Dean Widener, who's the largest apartment owner in Alaska and in the entire Northwest for that matter, he went and visited with the railroad folks and said, well, when do you want me to start building apartments? Because this looks pretty cool, and we agree. Speaking of down at the waterfront, one of our other projects that we feel very, very good about the direction it's going now after several years of turning this project around, and still one of our biggest challenges going forward. When we came into office, it was discovered within weeks, literally, that there was major construction problems down at the port. We stopped construction. We investigated whether or not it could continue with the design, with the sheet pile design that was being installed. West Construction went out there and actually successfully installed sheet piles where the other contractors had not been successful. But during that period of time, the question came up about whether or not the design itself met the seismic stability requirements for a major port like ours. We're not only the major port for the entire state, And you've heard the statistic over and over again, 90% of all the goods that come into the state come through that port. It is the lifeline for Alaska, but we're a strategic military port, and we have to be prepared at any moment to deploy equipment and vehicles to a war zone if required, and we've done it numerous times already. And so that port has to be done right. So we've scaled back the design. We're going to focus on repairing what we have and making sure it's modernized for the next 75 years. We've kicked MARAD, the Maritime Administration, off the project. It's going to be managed by us now. Our main contractor, C.H. Tuam Hill, is considered the finest project management team in the world, rated by all the contemporaries that do these things. We've got about $130 million in hand. We'll probably need about another $350 million or so to complete the project. A lot of money, but bottom line is, it's too essential not to finish. It's the bottom line. This is the most important port in our entire state. When we talk about projects or companies that are too big to fail, I always question that, but this project's too important to fail. So it's got to move forward. Some of the fun things we're working on, of course, is the centennial. As I mentioned, we'll be 100 years old next year. We've had numerous events already that have been significant for the community, starting with the commissioning of the USS Anchorage last year. We've had major museum exhibits already. Next year, the final exhibit of the centennial will be the Captain Cook Voyages. We'll have some of his original journals, and it'll just be, I guess, a world-class exhibit that'll tour after it's here. We had the free Spin Doctors concert last summer. The centennial film was debuted in September. It was an amazing piece of work, co-produced by John Larson of Dateline. There's going to be opportunities to see it in the future. That was kind of a premiere, but we're going to make sure that we have it exposed through both TV and other special events going forward. And then there will be CDs of it. You'll be very impressed when you see this work. It's an hour long, but you watch it and you feel like you just watched a two-hour top-rated movie. It's so full of great information and pictures and interviews. It's really something special. The school district curriculum, again, Pam Ormey at the Anchorage School District has put together an amazing curriculum for the students so they can learn about the history of Anchorage as well. And the curriculum program that she has developed is first rate. I just can't say enough about the work she's done. Byron Birdsall created a commemorative print for the centennial, which is available at Arctique, and it's been signed by all the living mayors. Charles Wolforth has written a book about Anchorage, which will be released next year, we think sometime in February. And there's literally dozens and dozens of centennial projects that have been funded by Erasmussen Grant. So Susan Duck, the centennial coordinator, is here. Raise your hand, Susan. And Anastasia, who introduced herself earlier, her able-bodied assistant. And they've just done a great job bringing all these. It's grown into something far beyond what I think I imagined at the start. It's so comprehensive. We've had the quilters that did a centennial quilt show that was just fantastic, and there's just, I can't even begin to name the dozens and dozens of events, but stay tuned, you'll see these advertised, and anytime you can get out and help support some of these events, that's a good thing. How's my time doing here? Oh, we're getting close. Finally, you know, you get to brag about Anchorage. Here's something I forgot to mention. One of the things we wanted to do was kind of a beautification project related to the centennial. So we're cleaning up dumpsters. We've got over 200 centennial wildlife dumpsters be placed around Anchorage within the solid waste services area. Instead of the green beat up metal dumpsters, each one has a stencil of some of the wildlife or dog mushing, some of the characteristics, wildlife characteristics of Anchorage. So definitely a step up. And then we've been working with a proposer on getting a zip line in Anchorage. So, you know, we've got all these other communities, and we've got wonderful hills here. I'm always looking for ways, and Julie's always looking for ways to keep visitors here a day longer or something else for them to do while they're in Anchorage. We want to have a world-class zip line here in Anchorage, and I think we can do it. Still more to come on that, so I can't say too much yet, but I think it could be something pretty special. And again, we've been starting to get recognized around the country, around the globe even, as a great place to live, work, and play. You look at some of the accolades we've received. Kiplinger said we're the 9th best city in America. Isn't that something? I mean, a little old Anchorage, Alaska, and they rate, you know, dozens of things: air quality, parkland, low employment rate, unemployment rates, foreclosure rates, all those benchmarks that you use both in quality of life and in economics. Outside Magazine had that contest where towns voted against each other or voted for each other in competition. We came in 6th in America. 11th best city to visit in the U.S., second best ski resort in the world, second greenest city in America. I mean, on and on. It's just makes you realize we do live in a pretty special place. And so really, what I want to say thank you, though, is about this whole theme was about an investment we've made in Anchorage. When I say we, I look around over this crowd, and we are certainly living in a place where it's worth our investment. We've made those investments, and today we are cleaner, safer, stronger than at any time in our history. So thank you for your investment in Anchorage.
You've been listening to Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan's State of the City Address on KSKA's Addressing Alaskans. This talk was recorded November 3rd at the Denina Center. If you want to see a video version of Mayor Sullivan's talk, there's a link on our website at alaskapublic.org. Thanks for tuning in with us this week on Addressing Alaskans. Thanks, too, to KSKA reporter Zach Hughes for his field recording. Until next week, I'm your host and producer, Monica Goki.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.